So now we're going to analyze Days of Wine and Roses. So if you could look at the actual chart of Days of Wine and Roses, and then two other sheets to look at. One says Symbols in Jazz, Harmonic Analysis, and then one says the Days of Wine and Roses with just Roman numerals on it. Let's go to the Symbols in Jazz, Harmonic Analysis. The famous book is John Meehan, who's a pianist who's no longer alive. He's the one who took classical harmonic analysis and applied it to jazz. He was sort of like I don't know if he was the first one, but certainly he was the most influential one. And still to this day, you see it. I personally don't, for those of you who know theory, like some people have a big Roman numeral 1 for the 1 chord and a small Roman numeral 2 for the 2, because the 2 is always minor. I don't do it like that. I follow John's thing where it's the 2, we know the 2 is minor, so it's just 2, you know. And then there's a little legend here. The triangle is major, the X is dominant 7, the minus is minor, the circle with a line through it is half diminished, which means minor 7 flat 5, and the 0 is a little, not 0, but like a degree symbol is diminished. Everybody with me so far?
Yeah.
The next thing is a little weird, like you don't see it that often, and this does differ from classical notation. When it's an inversion, everybody know what an inversion is? Let me pose that question. The root position is where the root of the chord is in the bass.
That's 1.
And let's just take C as an example. You got C, let's take C major 7. You got C, E, G, and B, which is on the sheet here.
Right.
And then the first inversion, that's root position because the root's in the bass. First inversion, the E is in the bass and the C goes on top. Now, in Meehan's language, that's a 6-5, and he explains, I'm boiling down many pages for you guys, so you can thank me later. You know, the distance between the E and the B is a 5th, and the distance between the E and the C is 6th, so he calls it a 1-6-5, which is another way of saying first inversion. And if you look continue, then the second inversion is 4-3, and the third inversion is 2. I still use this, but I don't see it that much. You know, maybe I just don't look at other people's harmonic analyses that much, but, you know, maybe they have a new system now, but this was the first system for jazz, so it's the one I follow. And you won't see these in a real book, because you wouldn't write the actual chord that way. You know, if it was a 1-4-3, I would just write C major 7/G. So there's no need to actually use. But when analyzing, that's what I use for an inversion. I do use these in a harmonic analysis. Sometimes like as a songwriting thing. Let me just digress for a second. There's so many uses of harmonic analysis. We didn't really talk about why we're analyzing. We did a little bit because it's central to jazz musicians' way of thinking. But there's so many other uses. And one of them is composition. Like when I hear something on the radio, you know, whether it's a pop song or whatever, and I hear just anything that catches my ear, I'll either write out or just make a thing in my dictaphone. And I won't say the key unless it's complicated and I need to just say it. But I'll say, you know, I like the sound of, you know, 1/3 inversion going to a whatever chord, you know, and then in Roman numerals. And then later on, I'll sketch it out and be like, and I won't even remember the example where it came from, and I'll come up with a completely new tune or exercise or something to think about musically.
But you can hear that stuff for listening to a tune.
If it's easy, if it's an easy pop song, you know, if it's Herbie Hancock, I can't necessarily, but like pop songs are good. Like it's funny, like, and the actual harmonized scale, this is not from Meehan, but the thing I put at the bottom is just to review like what the major scale harmony is. The one's always minor, the one's always major 7, the 2's always minor, 3 is minor, 4 is major 7, 5 is dominant, 6 is minor 7, and 7 is half diminished. Does anyone not heard that before? Question, what's the difference between half diminished and diminished? Half diminished is 1, flat 3, flat 5, flat 7. The notes of a B half diminished is B, D, F, and A. When you do a diminished, the 7 gets flatted again. So it would be B, D, F, and A flat or G sharp.
So
diminished is like 1, flat 3, flat 5, double flat 7, or 6. 6 is the same as double flat 7. Very good question. I get that question all the time. You got to just memorize that. Conveniently for you guys, I've summarized the harmonized scale in 12 keys. And this is like huge. Like, this is just me giving you a bar of gold right here. You know, this is a good question. This is a very good question that I get all the time. Major 7 is 1, 3, 5, natural 7. Like C, E, G, B. Right? Dominant 7 is 1, 3, flat, 1, 3, 5, flat 7, which is C, E, G, B flat. Now, over the years, why do we say C major 7 and then call the other one just C7? Why don't we say C dominant 7 to demark the difference? It's just because of common usage. A C7 is actually more common than C major 7, like, just because. So it, over time, it just became called C7. So you can't, if you have a C7, you're not going to call it C flat 7, because that makes it sound like C flat is the root, or B. So there's all kinds of confusion there. So, does that make sense? So let's just spell chords real quick. Spelling of chords. Major 7, 1, 3, 5, 7. Dominant 7, 1, 3, 5, flat 7. Minor 7, 1, flat 3, 5, flat 7. Half diminished, 1, flat 3, flat 5, flat 7. And diminished, 1, flat 3, flat 5, double flat 7. If you're ever on a piano, then you can play the... Do it in C, play C, E, G, B, flat the that's C major 7. You flat the B, you got C7. You flat the E, you got C minor 7. You flat the G, now you got C half diminished. And you flat the B again to be, you flat the B flat to become A, and you got diminished. So you're progressively flattening certain things. I can, right, you can look that up or listen to this again when we post it. But that's a very useful exercise. And then go backwards. Now you're at C diminished. Unflat the 7, you get the C half diminished. Unflat the 5th, you got C minor 7. Unflat the 3rd, you got C7. And unflat the 7th, you got C major 7. If you follow me just now, then you've probably seen this before. If you didn't follow that, it's because you've never heard this before, and I wouldn't expect you to just do it. But write out those things and work it out for yourself. The keyboard's a great instrument to work music theory stuff out. That's a very good question. The question is, when you see an inversion in a chart, is that something the ensemble should play like every time or what? And the answer is not really. You can invent and reinvent inversions all day long, and as long as it's something's in the same family, there's many ways to get from point A to point B in jazz. And sometimes people will spontaneously make up their own paths that the chart doesn't say. This is you're asking a deeper question, which is the essence of a chart is like there's push pins, like things that absolutely must be there in order to hold up that tune. But in between, there's variations. And that's why you see variations between some charts. You ever see the same song, you look up in one book and it's in a different key maybe, but if you had done the Roman numeral analysis, it would come out different. From three different sources. What's going on there? Why? Why does that happen? The truth is you can get from A to B lots of different ways, and the better people's ears are that you're playing with, the more they can follow it. Or of course, if you're a solo pianist or guitarist, you could do them whatever you like on the fly. Or if it's a very small group, that's another factor too. It depends on how many musicians are in the group, is how much liberties you can take and what their level is. So I gave you the harmonized scale chart. That's gold. I mean, you could play around with that all day long. Guitarists, you should be able to... And pianists, you should strive to play all those. And singers, you guys have no idea what value this is. I'm going to digress on this for a minute. Now, I'm no singer, so forgive me. But this is ear training. You could go, this is C. So you could go, 1, 3, 5, 7. Now, don't play anything else. Thank you. Now, don't play... That's it.
All right.
Next chord. D, or 2, 3, 5, 7, and then 3, 5, 3, 3, 5, 7, and then 4, 3, 5, 7, etc. Very good ear training practice. Well, what about backwards? You can do all kinds of stuff. So I'm on the 4, and I go 7, 5, 3, 4, 7, 5, 3, 2, 7, 5, 3, 1. Right? And if you don't get back where you started, something went wrong. You know. I know I'm going to come across as a music geek, I don't care. My sister, who's an even bigger music geek than me, she'll laugh when she hears this, if she ever hears it. We used to do it on the chairlift. In those days, when you went skiing, the chairlift took half an hour or more. I'm told that it takes you right up to now. And it was freezing cold. You would sit there for 30 to 45 minutes. Like, what were you going to do? So we practiced music theory stuff. That's where I learned it all, was on the chairlifts. Anyway. Right, so moving on, now we finally get to the analysis of the Days of Wine and Roses. If you look at the Roman numerals, now the best thing to do would be to look at the actual music and the Roman numerals itself that I wrote in. The key is F. It has one flat. It's kind of sloppy up there, but there is one flat before it says 4-4. Another way you could tell is the very last chord and the very last note, for those of you who read music, is an F. And F major 7 and F6, by the way, are in the same chord family. People ask me that too. Like, what is this F6? Remember I said the five... Oh, did we... Yeah, we did the five chord families. Major, dominant, minor, half diminished, and diminished. The sixth chord goes in the major family. Because it ain't dominant, and it ain't any of the other ones. You could substitute F major 7 for F6. So 1, 3, 5, 7, or 1, 3, 5, 6. Wait, I'm sorry, that was bad. 1, 3, 5, 6. There you go. Right?
Six.
That's just a natural 6. 6, 5, 6. Oh, this is embarrassing. 1, 3, 5, 6. 6, 5, 3, 1. Haven't practiced those in a while.
What's a
minor 6 is like... Like a minor 7, also with the flat 7 being taken down a half step to the 6. So minor 7 is 1, flat 3, 5, 7,
so
or flat 7.
So 6 is not
flat at all. 6 is not flat at all. All right, so getting back to this, I'll stop singing. It goes in the key of F. So the one chord is F. I mean, the F is one chord, then the flat 7, the X means dominant. Why is it a flat 7x? Because if you look at the harmonized scale chart that I gave you, second column, key of F, you go to the seventh scale degree. So it's E minor 7 flat 5 is what it falls naturally. So you have to indicate that it's not E, but E flat. So that's the flat 7 part. And then you have to indicate that the quality is different, meaning it's supposed to be a minor 7 flat 5, but it's not, it's a dominant. So you have to just tell it what it is. You have to tell us what it is. Does that make sense to everyone? Correct. So the question is, if the chord was E minor 7 flat 5, you would just write 7 with nothing before or after it. In actual practice, you would write a chord with a 7, but in harmonic analysis, we use X.
Okay.
So anytime you see any other marking after a Roman numeral in the analysis, like the X in bar 2 or the half diminished in bar 3, it's a deviation from what it would be from the normal harmonized scale. Let's take bar 3, for example. In the key of F, the 3 chord is normally what? Go to your harmonized scale and look it up if you don't know. It's A minor 7, but in the chart, it's A half diminished, so you have to indicate that.
So that's kind of like this.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are where the spicy notes are, you know. The D7, let's look at that. It says 4X. What is D normally in the key of F?
D minor.
It's D minor 7, yeah, so you would just say 6 if that were the case. I see, yeah. I mean, one reason this is helpful is you want to ask yourself, like, what are the outlying notes? What are the colorful notes? What are the juicy notes that really help outline the tune? In this second bar, the flat 7 dominant, in any key, if we could put it in the key of C, it would be B flat 7, right? The key of C, a flat 7 dominant. So what are the juicy notes that aren't in C major? It would be B flat, and what's the other note? Anyone else can tell me? So I'm changing the example. If you're in the key of C, and you have a flat 7 dominant, the root is what?
C.
B flat. You're in the key of C, the seventh is a flat 7, so the root is what?
B flat.
Yep. I think that's what you meant.
Yeah.
And then, but the chord is dominant, so there's another note that's not in C.
A flat,
well done. So if you take the time to digest that, you know, like, how is this helpful in the long run? Well, you'll get to know certain things. Like, the flat 7 dominant is very common. And you'll get to know that, okay, the flat 7 is in it, and the flat 6 is in it, according to that key. And you'll just kind of be able to navigate through changes a lot quicker. That's one advantage. Cool. So, I mean, it may even be helpful. Like, that's a little too esoteric, what I just said. That comes after many years of doing it. But what could be helpful is you could write in the non-diatonic notes underneath the chords as we go by, you know, if you wanted to. So you're in F. The non-diatonic notes in bar 2 would be E flat and D flat. The non-diatonic note in bar 3 would be E flat. The non-diatonic note in bar 4 would be F sharp. The non-diatonic note in bar 7 would be, I'm doing this in my head, B flat and D flat. Well, no, the B flat is diatonic, so it would be D flat. The non-diatonic note in bar 8 would be the same as bar 2, like that. You know, so if you wanted to go crazy, you could just play around with an F major scale the whole tune and highlight the juicy notes, and people would be like, "Ah, oh, that sounds great."